before and a tikiya after, but Chazal have a drasha that says every time there's a trua, you have to have a tikiya before and a tikiya after. And since it says it three times, so the basic d'oraisa requirement is tikiya, trua, tikiya three times. And that would be a total of 9 soundings of the shofar. Now, we then have in the Gemara that there were 3 different opinions. What is the nature of the trua sound? Trua is clearly a broken, crying, sobbing sound. But according to one opinion, it is in the nature of a groaning, which is elongated, which is what we call shivarim. Some others say it's whimpering, which is what we call trua. So it's very important. Some say what we call shivarim is what the Torah means by trua. Some say what we call trua is what the Torah means by trua. And some say it's a combination of krechting, of groaning and whimpering, which is what we call shivarim trua. Okay, it's very important to understand this. The Torah does not say shivarim, and the Torah does not say shivarim trua. The Torah uses the word trua. The 3 variations that we have are variations as to what is the meaning of the Torah's use of the word trua. It's either shvarim trua, or shvarim, or trua. Now, Rav Haigon explained that 3 different communities were doing different things. Everybody was yosei, because the Torah says whatever you accept is going to be fine. But Rabbi Avohu, who was a generation Amora, this is the first century, he was misaken uniformity. And because he was misaken uniformity, that requires 3 of each variation. Meaning, Doraisa, it's Tekiah, Trua, Tekiah, Tekiah, Trua, Tekiah, Tekiah, Trua, Tekiah. But since we have 3 versions of what is a Trua, we have to blow 3 of each type. And that gets you up to what is called 30 kolos, because the way it works is, we blow 3 tashrats, that's tekiya shvarim trua tekiya, 3 tashats, tekiya shvarim tekiya, 3 tarats. Okay? So, we go from 9 to 30. Okay, that's how you go from 9 to 30. Actually, we go from 3 to 9 to 30, because the original 3 are just 3 truas, but we have a drasha, tekiya before, tekiya after, so that gives you 9, and Rabbi Avos takana makes it 30. Now, even after Rabbi Avos takana, however, they would divide this 30 among each of the 3 brachas of Musaf. They did not blow the shofar before Musaf. after the bracha of Malchuyos, which are the part of the Shemoneh Esrei that proclaims God's kingship, they would blow 1 of each type. 1 tashrat, 1 tashat, 1 tarat. After Zichronos, that talks about God's remembrances, they would blow 1 tashrat, 1 tashat, 1 tarat. And after Shofarot, which talks about the shofar of Matan Torah, and the shofar of Techiyas HaMesim and Mashiach, they would once again blow 1 tashrat, 1 tashat, 1 tarat. Okay? So you get 30, but those 30 were distributed among the 3 blessings of Musaf, because Chazal, now the Torah doesn't require that, because first of all, Musaf itself is rabbinic. But the Rabbanan wanted to connect the shofar blowing to the prayer, because shofar is a non-verbal, wordless prayer. It is a cry of the heart. And it brings our prayers up to Hashem by reflecting the broken heart by which we turn to Him. And therefore, the Chachamim were misaken that the Tekiyah Shofar should be following the Seder HaBrachos. And that is called Tekiyos Dimi'umad, the Shofar blowing, which is done while we are standing up. Now, the truth is, we don't have to stand up. It's repetition of the Shemoneh Esrei, but since it's connected to Shemoneh and for, we call it the kiosk in which we stand up. Okay. So, we've gone from 3 to 9 to 30. We then go to positioning those 30. and Malchios, Achronos, and Shofros. But we're still missing a major, major chunk. We're missing the fact that we blow shofar before Musaf. And that is the last thing. In other words, when you learn the Mishnah, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, there was no such thing as blowing shofar before Musaf. That was a later addition. And the source of that is a statement of Rav Yitzchak, who's an Amora. And Rav Yitzchak says, why do we blow shofar when we sit and blow shofar when we stand? And his answer is, in order to confuse the Sata. Now, this is a confusing statement on all levels. First of all, what does he mean? Why do we blow shofar when we sit? What is he referring to? And what does he mean by confusing the Sata? So the Mefarshim explain, almost all the Rishonim explain, the one exception is the Baal HaMor, who has a different shot in the Gemara, that the tekiyos before Musaf are called the sitting tekiyos. Now, yeah, we stand up. But they're called the sitting tekiyos because they're not connected to the Shemona Esrei. And theoretically, if you wanted to, you could, I mean, the custom is not to sit, but you would be yotzei if you would sit down. So Rav Yitzchak is indeed addressing this issue. Since the Iker mitzvah of shofar blowing is to blow after Malchios, Achronos, and Shofros, why do we blow a whole other time before Musaf, which is called Tekiyos Dimiyushaf? In other words, he's asking, why is there that extra shofar blowing? And his answer is, we want to confuse the Satan. What does that mean? Because here is the idea. Again, there are a lot of explanations. The Satan is that force in God's heavenly court that is designed to criticize us, point out, it's the Midas Adin, point out our faults, point out why we don't deserve rachamim. Now, one of the symbols of shofar is the summons to the heavenly court. When you hear the shofar, you know you're going to be judged. So when the Satan hears the Jewish people blowing shofar early, it's like a prosecutor who's wondering, why does the defense want to go to trial so quickly? Maybe they have some hidden merit I'm not aware of. So the Satan, as it were, gets confused by the willingness of the Jewish people to go to court early. So according to this, Tekiyos Dimiyushav was enacted to kind of blow before the Musaf time, and that is a schus for Klal Yisrael, that we're ready to accept God's judgment, and that confuses the Sata, as it were. Other Rishonim say the purpose was very simple, simpler reason, that Tekiyos Dimiyushav were enacted for sick people or weak people who would not be able to stay for the stay for the long davening, so at least they hear shofar very, very quickly. Okay? So Bekitzur, therefore, the shofar blowing before Musaf has two reasons. It was either enacted for Cholim and Zakenim, who could not stay for the longer service, or it's a special, almost mystical, Kabbalistic idea of confusing the Satan. Okay? So this is Miyushav and Miumad. Now, how much do you blow for Miyushav? You blow also 30, but you blow it in a different way. Instead of one of each three times, you do three of each. In other words, right away. So in other words, three tashrats, three tarats. And that's the Kiyos de Miyushav. So now, what have we got? We've gone from 3 to 9 to 30 to 60. We now have blown shofar 60 times. Right? From 3 to 60. A multiple of 12. Now, I'm going to give you a complicated halachic point, which maybe I shouldn't give you because it's not our minhag, but it's a very fascinating discussion in the Rishonim. There are Rishonim that say, once we have done the Tekiyos Dimiyushav, so you've been yaitzei the basic 30, we don't have to do so many in Musaf anymore. In other words, I had mentioned that in Musaf, you, after Malchiyos, you blow one tashrat, one tarat. And that's actually what we do. But some Rishonim, and some have a different minhagim, some Rishonim say, well, hey, You've heard all the variations already. So you don't have to repeat all the variations again. So according to their view, and actually they have two different views, according to their view, you just do one tashrat after Malchias, one tashrat after Zichronos, one tashrat, because tashrat does have the shorim and the trua, and you don't have to repeat them separately because you already covered your bases. According to that, you're not going to have 60 altogether. Okay? Other Rishayim have something even stranger. After Malchias, they do one tashrat. After Zichronos, one tashrat. After Shofaris, one tarat. So they either do one tashrat after each, or one tashrat, one tarat, respectively. But again, I wouldn't worry about it too much, although in Lumbus it's very fascinating, because our minhag is we do one of each. In other words, tashrat, tashat, tarat after Malchias, tashat, tashrat, tarat, tashrat, tashat, taronos, tashrat, tashat, tarat after Malchia, after Shofros, that gives you a total of 60. 30 by the Ma'uma, by the Miyushev, and 30 by the Ma'uma. Everyone has the cheshvan. Okay. Now, let me point out something else. Ashkenazim are going to have 60 by the time they finish Musaf. But many Sfardim and Hasidim are going to have 90. And let me explain why. We talked about Tekiyas de Me'umat, which after Malchias you blow, after Zichronos you blow, after Shofros, right? Those are the three sections that have the verses of kingship, remembrance, and Shofar. Ashkenazim say you only blow in the repetition of the Shmoneh Esrei. So you only get 30 of the Me'umat. So when you add it to the Miyushav, you get 60. But Sfardim and Hasidim, based on different interpretations, take the position that the blowing of the shofar in Mu'umad is not only during the repetition of the Amidah, but it's even during the silent Amidah. Now, how does that work? That's a little strange. We're davening the silent Amidah. Everybody's in a different place. So if you've ever experienced it, it's a very, very strange feeling. But at some point, whenever the Chazan, who's davening silently, finishes Malchios, he'll give a bang, and the shofar blower is standing right next to him. And you can be in the middle of anywhere, and all of a sudden you'll hear like shofar coming out of nowhere. And then it'll be again one tashrat, one tashat, one tarat. And then whatever it is, 20 minutes later, or whenever he reaches the Chronos, wherever you are, you could be anywhere, a clap, right? So according to that minhag, in which there is Tekiyas de Me'umat, not only in the Chazaras Hashatz, but in the silent Amidah, you actually have blown the shofar 90 times, right? So Ashkenazim have blown it 60 times, starting from 3, and Sfardim and many Hasidim have blown it 90 times. Okay? Now, it is a little bizarre because it's not so clear that how we can be yaitzei this inyan of blowing after each of the brachos if we're not up to those brachos. I mean, how am I mekayim the inyan of blowing the shofar after Malchios if I'm not up to the end of Malchios yet? It's a bit of a kasha, exactly. How are people yotzei unless they daven in unison? Possible in the silent Shmoneh Esrei. How do you possibly daven in unison? You're not supposed to hear each other there. But I'll tell you a little story that Rabbi Abraham Persky tells, and that is, the thing is, since people are in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei, they cannot move around. That's why the Baal Tokeya has to be right next to the chazan and blow. So let's say sometimes you have a situation, Baruch Hashem, it doesn't happen here, that the Baal Tokeya just can't do it. You got to replace him in the middle. Sometimes just blowing, you know, you never know. You might be called upon, you know, the last minute, and like so, be ready. Now the thing is that when you're blowing in the silent Shmoneh Esrei, right, you know, nobody can move. So what happens in Chassidus Shishos when this happens is that you just pass the shofar around till it gets to somebody who feels they can blow. You just, because you can't, and you don't even know who has it. So Abraham Twersky says that when he was like 8 years old, he was davening in his father's shul, Chassidish Rebbe, and somehow the shofar got passed to him because people had trouble blowing, and he blew the shofar perfectly. But the problem is, of course, if a katan blows the kiyat shofar, you're not yotze. So he told his father afterwards, he didn't know the halacha, he just told his father with a lot of pride, you know, I was able to blow the shofar. So he writes about the tremendous mixture of annoyance and nachas that his father had. His father was very, very proud, but he was also very annoyed, because the truth is, there's no way you could fix this, because, in other words, if, for example, a katan had blown the first 30, so we would just blow the first 30 again. But when the katan blows during musaf, you can't fix that, because blowing again doesn't count, because you have to blow it during musaf. And you don't repeat musaf if you were yotzei musaf. So in effect, if a katan blows it either in the repetition or in the silence, you know, whichever way it would be, that is actually something that is not correctable. Unlike the blowing before musaf, which you'll just blow after davening, etc. 30. Okay. All right. So I hope you see the development here from 3 truas to 60, and according to some views, 90. And that is as far as the Gemara takes it. Meaning the Gemara's last step is, we have the Takana of Rabbi Avahu, which made it into 30, and then we have the Tekiyas de Miyushev, which Rav Yitzchak adds, which is to be Ma'arvev, the Satan, to confuse the Satan. Okay. So now, the final step in this evolution is a halacha that is not Ermina, that is not in the Gemara at all. You will not find it in the Gemara at all. But it does date from the time of the Gaonim, so it's fairly early, after Talmudic times. And the Gaonim said, it would be a nice minhag that we should blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah 100 times. 100 times. And they base the significance of 100 on a medrash. So there is a medrash, but the medrash doesn't apply it to shofar blowing. The medrash says that, remember, there was one of the Rishayim that oppressed Am Yisrael in the time of the Tanakh was Sisra. And Devorah was the woman judge who defeated Sisra in battle. But it mentions that Sisra's mother cried and sobbed for her son. She cried for her son, waiting for him to come. And Sisra was killed by Yael, right? She was a woman, Yael, etc. And Chazal have a Mesoira that Sisra's mother cried 100 times. And even though she was a Risha'a, but the concept is that a mother's cry always awakens divine mercy. And somehow that's still even against us even today. It's something against us, her claim for mercy. And therefore, we blow the shofar 100 times to countermand and defeat the crying of Sisra, which means, in an allegorical way, it basically means that we ask Hashem not to have rachamim on the umos that persecute us, because rachamim for them would turn into something very destructive for us. So because of that, therefore, you have to bring up the Kiyat Shofar 100 times. Now, let's figure out how much more you have. So under the standard Ashkenazic custom, when you have finished the Kiyos de Miyushav and the Kiyos de Me'umad, you have 60. You have 60, right? So all you need is another 40. So how do you get the 40? So very simple. If you blow one Tashrat, one Tashat, one Tarat, you have 10. Because that's 4, 3, and 3. So you blow one of each, and then you blow 3 of each, which gives you 30. Okay, so it's one of each, one tashrat, one tashat, one tarat, that's 10. And then you blow 3 tashrats, 3 tashats, 3 tarats, which gives you 30. And the way this is done is, in the Kaddish, since it's not part of the Tekiyas de Me'umad, it's a way to do it in Musaf proper, but during the Kaddish, which follows the Kaddish Shalom, the whole Kaddish, that follows Musaf. So right before the Chazan says Tiskabel, accept our prayers, we have a brief interruption in the middle of Kaddish where the Baal Tokeya blows one of each. One Tashrat, one Tarat, that's 10. Then after the Kaddish is finished, before Ein Kelokeinu, the Chazan blows 3 of each. 3 Tashrats, 3 Tarats. Assuming he does everything right and he doesn't have to repeat, which sometimes he does, the shofar will be blown 100 times. Often it's blown more than that. Sometimes 150 times, you know, depending on how many times he might have to repeat. But if he does it right. Now I remember the first time, I obviously heard this as a young child, but it didn't always compute to me. But I remember the first time when I was in Eretz Yisrael, and I kind of got it, I was like ninth grade or whatever, and I was aware of this dimly, what was going on. I just didn't understand. I thought we were finished already. Like, you know, gee, we just blew shofar. And then in the middle of Kaddish, we blow it again. Okay, so, okay, it's over. And then after Kaddish, over and over and over again, I didn't understand. I thought it was because of mistakes that were made. But no, you have to get 100 kolos. Now, since mea kolos is only a minhag, and since the kios de ma'umad even can only apply b'tzibor, dominion davening, whether it's in the repetition or not, if a person is sick or a woman has to hear shofar outside of a shul, all we do is the basic 30. As we do not blow 60, and we don't certainly don't blow 100, the 100 is only done in shul, and even the kikiyas de ma'umad generally during musaf is only done in shul. And whether it's a man or a woman, not just a woman, whether a man or a woman, if they have to hear shofar privately, we just do 30, and that is, you know, 3 Tashrats, 3 Tarats. Okay? So this is kind of the evolution of Tekiyah Shofar, the Takana of Rabbi Avo, Miyushav and Mu'umad, and then the last stage, which is post-Talmudic, is the idea of Mea Kolos. Okay? Everyone understands how you get that. Now, there's a big machlokas rishonim in the following. When do we make the bracha, right? Shofar is like any other mitzvah. And before we do the mitzvah of shofar, we make a bracha. Or at least the one who's blowing the shofar makes the bracha. Brachata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Asher Kiddushanu B'mitzvosav B'tzivanu Oa Kol Shofar. God has commanded us to hear the sound of the shofar, right? That's the mitzvah. By the way, so the mitzvah, by the way, is not defined as he has commanded us to blow the shofar. It's important. The commandment is to hear the shofar. So you might ask Akasha, well, if it's to hear the shofar, then why can't I listen to a recording of the shofar, putting aside electricity on Yom Tov and the like? Well, the answer is, if I hear a recording of the shofar, I'm not hearing the shofar. So the shofar has to be blown, because that is the only way I will be hearing the shofar. But the mitzvah is the hearing of the shofar, not the blowing per se. Which is why, for example, that would actually mean that a person that's totally deaf, again, he's putter, but he has no way of fulfilling, even if he blows the shofar, he has not fulfilled a mitzvah because he has not heard. But the mitzvah is to hear the sound of the shofar. Yeah.
If he's totally deaf, but he has the feeling in his lips, he still cannot be the Baal Tokeiah, right? Because he can't hear. It's being a
that's correct. It has to. That's recommended. It has to be an auditory simulation, not a vibration of the mouth.
For a deaf person who, I mean, I don't know what this is like, but I know if I completely cover my ears, I can still hear myself talk, and I can still hear myself.
No. Well, the answer is, I mean, deafness has many, many variations. You're mm-hmm. correct. There are many, many deaf people. If they stand close enough, they can hear at least a faint. In fact, there's no shalos of hearing aid. Some say that hearing aid would not be a valid way of hearing shofar because, the reason is following. The amplification of sound is really electrical energy, right? What happens is sound waves are converted to electric waves, and the electric gets reconverted. So you're not hearing the original sound of the shofar. So I know in my shul there was a deaf person who was, you know, actually quite a Talmud Chacham. He would take off his hearing aid for Tekiyah Shofar, and he would just stand right up there, right next to the Baltic Kay, and he was able to hear. So, you know, that's going to be the case in many cases. I'm raising maybe a theoretical case, but if somebody literally is not able to do that, then he would not be Yotze. Yeah.
So this is on hearing the shofar. What was wrong with the guitar blowing?
Excellent question. That's actually one of the famous questions that the Achronim ask on this idea, that if the mitzvah is to hear, then who cares who blows it? In fact, the katan should be good. And one might even take an extreme case. What about a goy? Why can't the goy blow the shofar? You know, if you want it, for whatever reason. I mean, who cares who blows? The answer that's given is a very sure answer. The answer that's given is that you still need to be defined as the blowing of the shofar. It is the blowing of the shofar only if it's a person who has the mitzvah of shofar. Otherwise, it's not called the blowing of the shofar. Now, the truth is, that actually is not such a logical answer. Because what do you mean? Even if I don't have the mitzvah, I'm blowing a ram's horn. How can you say it's not called blowing of a shofar? But nevertheless, this is an answer that is given. But it's a good. The question is better than the answer. Yeah.
Does the Kabbalah have anything to say about this? The Yidden has to do it.
Well, I mean, it's not just Kabbalah. I mean, Halakha is very clear. Also, I mean, this is not an I don't mean to say it's an ambiguous law. Well, I mean, certainly, if you understand the idea of the shofar as the call of the heart that rips apart the strict judgments and turns judgment into mercy, so it has to be someone that's involved in that process. I mean, one can understand it. Just halachically, it doesn't fit the normal rules. Now, let me just mention a big machlokas rishayim. The Rif, the great Rif, brings a psak halacha that says that even though we recite the bracha before the tekiyos de miyushev, right? But the miyushev and the mu'umad are one big mitzvah. We do the mitzvah with all of that blowing. And therefore, the bracha is going not only on the tekiyos before musaf, but even the tekiyos during musaf. Therefore, the Rif paskins, you are not allowed to talk at all from the time of the first shofar blowing till the last shofar blowing after musaf. And the reason is because it's all one big mitzvah. And if it's one big mitzvah and you made one bracha covering the whole mitzvah, you cannot interrupt until you finish that thing. That is why, now of course the truth of the matter is, for a whole bunch of reasons, you shouldn't be talking anyway. You're not allowed to talk during the repetition of Shemona Esrei, right? but putting that aside, the halacha is that you can't interrupt between the Miyushev and the Mu'umad, and we don't consider all that davening to be an interruption, because that's part of the mitzvah of blowing the shofar, is to connect it to davening. That is why, in shuls that might have talking during Chazaras Hashatz, the Chazaras Hashatz of the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are the quietest Chazaras Hashatz of the whole year, because everybody is conscious that they're not allowed to talk between the beginning of Tekiyos to Miyushev until the last Tekiyos, which are Mashlim, the Mea, the hundred Kolos. Some people are so Machmir that they don't even sing with the chazan, which is interesting. Now, most people are making this, but there's some people who will, if the chazan has a nigun that might invite congregational singing, they will not sing with the chazan, because if that's not part of their official davening, they would treat that as a hefsek. Now, I don't want to chas v'shalom say anything that will encourage people to talk. I just want to point out that the Ramban is cholek on the Rif. And the Ramban's shita is that once you heard the 30 kolos of Miyushev, you have fulfilled the basic mitzvah of shofar. And although we blow shofar to connect it to tefillah, it's no longer the mitzvah of shofar. And therefore the Ramban says there is no problem of being mafsik between Miyushev and Mu'umad. But don't tell anybody this, because we don't want people to talk. Now, this has a very important relevance about the question of Kiddush. Let me just enter, then I'll take a question. That is, you know, Rosh Hashanah davening is very long, And especially in yeshiva, it's longer than it would be in a regular shul, right? So there are problems here, because you're not supposed to eat before davening, except for water, that we know, maybe coffee and tea. Certainly you're not supposed to have cake before davening. On the other hand, we also have a rule that on Shabbos or Yom Tov, you're not supposed to fast past the middle of the day, 12:30 or 1 o'clock. So if I don't eat before davening, and I don't eat until after Musaf, typically on Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur, I don't eat anyway, but on Rosh Hashanah, I'm going to violate fasting on Yom Tov, yeah. That could be. If you had something before davening, l'chayr, you're okay. But also, there's another issue, that even if you're not going to be over the Isser Tainus, but by that much late in the day, if all you had was water or tea, it's going to be hard to concentrate on Musaf. So because of this, in yeshivish circles, there has become a minhag that people make Kiddush before Musaf. And that way, they daven Shachris, you're allowed to make Kiddush after Shachris before Musaf, and then you have a piece of cake, and then you're able to concentrate. Now the question becomes, where can you position? Because look, remember the order here. We daven Shachris. After Shachris, we have Torah reading. After Torah reading, we have Haf Torah. Then we have Tekios Dimi Yushav. Maybe a Dret Kios Dimi Yushav. Then we have Musaf. So, because we paskin like the Rif, you can't make Kiddush after Miyushav, before Musaf, after shofar blowing, because you would then be interrupting between Miyushav and Mu'umat, and according to the Rif, it is a hefsek, although the Ramban would allow it. Therefore, because our minhag is to be noyeg like the Rif, the Kiddush that we make is after the Haftarah, but before Tekiyah Shofar. Right, so here they're going to announce they're going to make a Kiddush after Haf Torah, before Miyushav, because they can't do it after Miyushav, because that would be a Hefsek. But here is the problem. There is another halacha that you're not supposed to eat before Tekiyah Shofar. So you really have a no-win situation. Because if I don't make Kiddush at all till after Musaf, I got the problem of either fasting possibly or not being able to concentrate. If I make Kiddush after Miyushav, I'm violating the Rif's halacha that you're not allowed to be mafsik between Miyushav and Ma'umad. If I make it like we do, before Miyushav, I'm eating cake, I'm eating mazonos, before Tekiyat Shofar. Not allowed to do that. So what do you do? So this is a big machlokas. No matter what you do, you're doing something wrong. So the question becomes, what is the lesser of two evils? In the Olam HaYeshivas, the minhag was decided that the ability to daven Musaf with Kavana is so significant, is so important, and people who didn't eat anything are not able to concentrate, that it was thought that it would be worthwhile to make Kiddush even before shofar blowing, even though you're violating that halacha, because that was considered to be a tzorech tefillah. But there were many gedolim who took the opposite position. In fact, many gedolim took the position that it would actually be better to interrupt between Miyushav and Ma'umat, because the Ramban allows it, than to do it before Miyushav. Right? That kedekach. But be it as it may, within the yeshiva world, there are still, even though the yeshiva officially allows people to make Kiddush, and it may encourage it, but there are many individual people who don't. And in other words, they don't. In other words, they're yaitzei the yisur of tainus by drinking water or coffee before shachris, and they will not make any other Kiddush till after the meal. Yeah. After the Musaf, yeah.
I asked the Rav a couple of years ago about consuming something other than coffee and water before davening, yeah. And juice is the answer. Now, in Rosh Hashanah, where it's much longer, certainly we're not supposed to have mazonos before Shacharis, but could we have, like, apples and bananas and fruit, vegetables? other the
answer is basically no, but I do want to say, though, that, you know, you will find, Mr. Burr alludes to this himself, Mr. Burr alludes to a minhag among many German Jews, religious German Jews, that even on a Shabbos, they would have tea and cake before Shacharis, on the grounds that they needed it to concentrate for davening. So there is such a shita that the tzorach tefillah you could even eat before davening. You wouldn't make kiddush before davening. So. The Mishnah Berurah, however, is very, very against it. There may be a heter for someone who's really old or sick to eat before davening, but a normally healthy person should not eat before a Shabbos davening. Now, it is true Rosh Hashanah is a different situation, but still, we're no egg. Not to eat anything before davening other than the ingestion of liquids. Coffee, tea, okay, if we talk about juice, you know, it might be possible as well, which can give you some energy. So that's what I say. So the minhag of the yeshivos is that they do make a kiddush after Haftorah before Miyushev, but this was a minhag, as I say, that was very, very controversial, and many, many gedolim considered it to be improper. But again, you could be saying, you could be samech, and I'm not telling you not to be samech on it, but
just be aware. How do we know there's a halacha that you can't eat something before?
Kiyas Shaver? It's in the Shulchan Aruch. It's in the Shulchan Aruch. You can't eat. But you see, the problem is, we're combining two things. In other words, we're following the riff that says you can't interrupt Miyushev and Muhammad, and then we're saying you can't do it before Kiyas Shaver. If you wouldn't go like the riff, if you go like the Ramban, your solution is very simple. Make kiddush after you hear the 30 kolos of Miyushev before Musaf. It would just take another 20 minutes. The problem, the dilemma we have is that we're really following two different chumras. We're following the chumra, or at least optimally, of not eating before Tekiyah Shefer, and we're following the chumra of the riff that says you cannot interrupt between Miyushev and Muhammad. Hence, you do have a dilemma. And then you have to do something wrong. I mean, you've painted yourself into a corner where whatever you do, you're violating some halacha. Yeah.
Water before tekiya would also be...
No, water before tekiya is fine. Water is permitted anyway. Yeah. Whatever you can have before davening, you can have before tekiya. However, let me explain something. There is a technical problem. Because once you finish shachris, see, here's your problem. Once you finish shachris, you cannot have even water without making kiddush first. So here is the problem. Yeah, you're allowed to have water before shofar, but you're not allowed to have grape juice before shofar, right? So how are you going to drink water without making kiddush? See, before shachris, you're not chayiv in kiddush yet. You see what I'm saying? So the water and coffee and tea thing is only going to work before shachris. After shachris, you're in big trouble because although water is permitted, but water is permitted only by the making of kiddush. Now, one answer might be, if you're married, ask your wife to make kiddush for you because she's allowed to eat before shofar blowing because she's not chayavis. And she could be mitzi you in kiddush, so she can drink the wine and you can have the water. Well, that's still a problem, though, because kiddush requires a makam sudi, you need mazonas. Yeah. So it's not going to work. You're not going to be yitzi kiddush without mazonas. Yeah.
Isn't there a subject... whether or not a person has a
chiyuv
of kiddush after
shacharis
and before
mizuf? We pass in that there is a chiyuv kiddush after shacharis. I mean, it's machlokes rishayim, but la halacha. I'll check. Maybe you're right. But as I recall it, I believe we pass in that it is a chiyuv kiddush. Yeah. Okay, so that's kind of the background of it, and okay, we'll continue. And good to see you tomorrow.
Thanks so much, man.
Yeah.